Blog Talk Radio.
Snappy timing there, Blog Talk. Aha! Welcome, one, welcome all to Eerie House Radio. It's Faces of Fear. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, here along with...
Facing It Together with Dave Binkley from The Weirdness Really Bad Movie.
And we got another fine, fine program for you today with lots and lots of radio rarities. We'll be discussing The Faces of Fear. It's been kind of a face in the weekend type of weekend. Last night we played some great radio for you. Episode of The Shadow and also The Mysterious Traveler. We have an equally as exciting series for you later on today from The Sealed Book.
Absolutely. Yeah. And just so much wonderful radio in so many different ways. We just love lumping them together in different ways and presenting them as the conglomerate that we do, and gives us different topics to talk about instead of just talking about the radio show. Like The Faces tonight.
Yes. And we put up a bunch for you in the slideshow if you're watching now or later in the archives. Watching? Yes, you're watching radio.
Yes, you're
put a lot of the faces of horror from movies, and it's funny how faces can be used for in a variety of ways to weave an exciting tale or share things of horror. People seem to abhor ugliness. Well, that's a subjective term, ugliness, I suppose, but there are some things that pretty much frighten everybody.
There are. One of those faces that scare a lot of people are clown faces. And there's been a couple of clown faces that have been creepy in the movies as well.
Yeah. They've been used so much in films that even the happy, smiling ones, you wonder if there's some sinister motive behind it with clowns.
Yep. There's only one thing creepier than clowns, and that's mimes. So.
Yeah. No mimes. No mimes on radio. We tried it. It doesn't work.
We tried it. It didn't work real well. Yeah.
No, I was stuck in that box for hours and couldn't get out.
You were. I couldn't find the key. It was an invisible key.
Yeah. Some of the great makeup artists like Jack Pierce set the standards early, I think, in movies for faces of that are fearful. You have, of course, the original Boris Karloff Frankenstein makeup and The Bride as well. He did so many things. He did the Wolfman for Lon Chaney
Yes.
Jr.
Yeah.
The Mummy. So many more. One picture from The Mummy of Karloff, it's a close-up of his eyes. They almost look like they're moving. and it's not a GIF, honest. The makeup is more subtle, I think, than like the Frankenstein monster, or certainly more subtle than the Wolfman, but it's so sinister. He looks so evil there.
I was going to say, when you talk about your classic faces, you have to go back to Lon Chaney Sr., the man of a thousand faces.
Oh.
And look at all the different things he did and he portrayed. It just makes it really in awe of his talents there. Matter of fact, I think his different faces made him... transformed him into other people.
Yes. His makeup kit, and unfortunately his type will never be seen again because there's unions and you can't do your own makeup anymore. But his original makeup kit, I believe, is has been kept and restored at the, I believe it's the Smithsonian, but it has been preserved for history, and thankfully so, because the guy was amazing.
You look at the guy, and he's an average-looking guy, but boy, when he adds that makeup, everything from the Hunchback to the Phantom of the Opera, and so many of these other faces that he created, made him horrifying. And it made me wonder that maybe him passing in 1930, just as sound movies were coming about, the sound might have hurt him.
I've heard that actually he had a great set of pipes. There's a wonderful biography of him. I can't remember if it was Netflix. I think more likely on Amazon Prime. I don't know if it's still, you know, free on Prime or not, but I had the opportunity to watch it when it was. And no, actually, he spoke very well. And, of course, he was highly considered for Dracula. But did not survive for that opportunity, and due to Lugosi's wild popularity on stage doing Dracula, of course, history was made there too. That's another face of fear is Lugosi in the original Dracula.
And his eyes, frightening. As much as his face, his eyes were so commanding. His eyes drew you in. With Lugosi, especially there in that, especially in Dracula.
Yeah, very penetrating gaze. And he was an attractive fella, you know what I mean? And that added to, I think, the popularity of the character.
I think that the whole popularity of the vampire is kind of a sexual mystique as well that goes along with it.
Yes.
He is, in many ways, very gentle, and the way he goes about it is almost almost like he's making love to them as he's taking their life from them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's almost like a kiss, a passionate kiss, rather than sucking the life out of them.
Yeah.
But no, I think you bring up a very, very good point there. That is part of the attraction, I think, of vampires in general, because he was, you know, an aristocratic count, very cultured, but also that, I think, added to the horror of what he really was. Other faces of fear. Remember The Exorcist, Dave?
You know what? I looked at this the list of the scariest faces in horror movies. And that is listed as the number one horror face, is Regan McNeil in The Exorcist. Yes.
Yeah. You can do other things, too. Look at even television did stuff with faces. Remember the one episode where the lady was bandaged? And they didn't do a big reveal until the end of the show, where they kept telling her, "You're going to have to adjust. You're hideously malformed." And
so the eye of the beholder.
The whole thing was, you don't even know. You don't even notice that you're not seeing the actors. They're in shadow, or cameo or something, where you don't see the details of them. And at the end, it's a very, very pretty woman, and all the people around her are disfigured.
Good old Donna Douglas running around in a nursing gown, yeah.
Yes. And Ellie Mae.
Good old Ellie Mae, yep. You know, Rod even did another version of that as well in a sense, it was almost the same thing on the Night Gallery, where I'm trying to think of the... Who was the actor who died in the Twilight Zone, the movie?
Vic Morrow.
Vic Morrow, right. He was in this, and his son
Sorry,
had that hideous face, and they were doing this exchange planet with his other planet where the people at the other planet looked like his son. Makes you wonder what his wife was doing, you know.
Yes. something interplanetary hanky panky going on here.
He was hideous. He was hiding from everybody on the planet and such, and yet the people coming from there looked at him when they were passing the hall and said, "Oh, you're beautiful, and I'm so hideous." And he looked like just a really good-looking guy. Rod revisited that once again in the Night Gallery.
Pretty frightening movie that I've seen only parts of, and it's something that it's one of those historical pieces I need to see. It's a film from France called Eyes Without a Face. Okay, and it's a story of a surgeon who causes an auto accident in which his daughter becomes horribly disfigured, and it is a horror tale. He is trying some rather peculiar ways to get a face for her, and therein lies the horror. Okay. The French title is Le Yo Sans Visage. Where is Jacques La Nostra shot when I need him? Because I probably butchered the heck out of this. But it's from 1960, roughly the same year Psycho came out, and it looks equally as terrifying. So that's something I believe might be possible to view with subtitles on YouTube, if I'm not mistaken. So that's something I'm going to make time to see, because it's it seems historical and in the horror genre, and I haven't seen it yet.
Hey, if we want to look at the top five here, they have, of course, Regan McNeil from The Exorcist. Number two, Pennywise the Clown from It. We talked about clowns a little bit earlier.
I hope they mean the original.
They're listing the 2017 film. I thought as far as horrifying face, I thought the original one was much more horrifying.
So did I.
Number three, Leatherface from Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Ah, yeah.
Number four, Mike Myers from Halloween, not from Saturday Night Live.
Just a bland Bill Shatner.
Number five, Freddy Krueger from Nightmare on Elm Street.
I don't highly disagree with that list.
Yeah, those are the top five. And these are kind of like people, they also have check marks on the side. You can also vote for these as they go along. It's on the top10s.com/scariest-faces-horror-movies. Okay.
Okay. I would, all five of those would be on my top ten. I don't know that I necessarily agree with all of them. I would definitely rate these as, Reagan, very high on the list. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, probably in the top three at least, because that's a pretty horrifying,
it is.
Memorable face.
Doesn't even have to throw up on you to get that effect.
Yeah.
All right, then to see if the rest of yours might fit in the top ten, Ghostface from Scream is number six. The Jigsaw Puppet from Saw is number seven.
Okay.
Jason Voorhees from Friday the 13th is number eight. Chucky, is that fair to say that? I mean, that's a puppet, right? From Child's Play is number nine.
I have a hard time taking those movies seriously.
And then number ten, Annabelle from The Conjuring. That's what people have voted the top ten.
I'll have to see Annabelle to rate her against Talking Tina.
Yeah.
Because Talking Tina is pretty high up there on my list. And I think it is personal, too, when you make your lists yourself of horror or television images of faces that were horrifying. It depends when you first saw it and maybe how old you are, your experience or your you get desensitized to gore after a time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you do. And everybody sees a horror is a little bit different than others. And, I think one of the great things that Rod did with horror of the face was in The Mask, where people were horrified that they, you know, they put on these ugly, ugly masks, which they didn't really want to put on, but they were putting the fulfilling the whims of their uncle, their rich uncle, as he was about to die and they were about to inherit his money.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Their faces became what the masks were because he thought those
That's
masks represented them, and actually they did represent them, each and every one. And that's what they were stuck with. Yeah, he passed, and yeah, they were going to get the money, but they were stuck with these faces that everyone could see that what was their true inside. That's frightening.
It is, and when I think about this topic in general and what we've just talked about, Dave, I'm going to have to conclude that horror, like beauty, is in the eye of the beholder.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That is the profundity of the night, folks. That is the most profound thing you'll ever hear out of me again.
And it was so original.
I must be medicated.
You know,
or something.
You know, very, very much like, you know, you'll get something like the Beauty and the Beast. And it's an interesting way of, I don't mean the musical, but I mean in the stories and
yeah.
the other movies in the series and such, they portray him as not as a kind of a beautiful person in his heart, and usually the person that is the beauty is a person that very much sees through the ugliness of the face and the beauty of the soul, type thing.
Yeah.
Oh, that is.
But then I've also heard a great Southern country and Western humorist once say that. Beauty is only skin deep, but ugly goes clear to the bone. So I don't know.
I have a friend that said there's the most beautiful. You can have the most beautiful woman in the world, but if you do, there's the thing is that says that she's been a pain in the butt to somebody else. So, you know.
Yes.
And everybody has their right as. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder, or either, you know, everybody has their own idea of what truly beautiful is.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
Just as ugly is, and interesting enough, our show tonight really isn't about beauty or ugliness, as we look at the sealed book tonight, but it is about facing. Things. And
yep.
we need
to face real quick the chat. Want to say hello to Fogsbane, and Gil Girl joins us today. Hi, guys.
Hey, that's twice as many people as we had there last night. All right.
At least. And then there's me, myself, and I, too. But
hey,
we do
was.
Have some... We do have some incredible radio for you today that goes along with our topic, of course.
Yeah, we have, once again, we return to the sealed book. And this is an episode called The Man with a Stolen Face. And once again, the sealed book, and it's not really anything new to Harry House, but always have wonderful stories. And why not? These are stories that were actually originally performed a little differently on The Mysterious Traveler. So these are redone Mysterious Traveler stories. The book originally aired between March 18th and September 19th of 1945. And these were reworked of stories by Robert Arthur and David Kogan, who just were... so prolific and did so many programs like The Sealed Book, The Mysterious Traveler, and, of course, they had the Strange Dr. Weird as well, which also worked 15-minute versions of their stories that they had originally done in The Mysterious Traveler.
Once you get used to the half-hour format, it must be very difficult to cram those into 15-minute shows.
Yeah, And taking your half-hour script and turning it into a 15-minute thing, here's an exercise for you sometime if you think it's easy. Take even an hour movie, public domain or whatever, and put it on your editing board and try and knock that down to a half hour and still tell a story. So I thought it was amazing. There's a guy out there that created a Twilight Zone out of the Planet of the Apes episode, or the Planet of the Apes movie. They kind of created a Twilight Zone episode that had a Rod Serling narration at the beginning and at the end, turned it into black and white.
I've seen that. It's brilliant. I've seen that.
It is. And if you didn't know that was from Planet of the Apes, you would not even imagine that was part of a full length. Now, that was some unbelievable editing, and that's something. But I'm just saying, as an exercise, throw it up on an editing board and try and turn a one-hour movie into a one-half-hour program, and make it make sense.
I bet some you could easily, and some would be very, very difficult, depending on the movie and how. Some movies are so slow paced. There's a lot of places I see where you could edit stuff out to keep it moving and keep it flowing.
That's why when I made the radio dramas, almost every sentence meant something that either was happening right then or you could go back to it later in the story. If I were to try and turn one of those into a 15-minute, it would not quite be the same. That's for darn sure.
No. But we got the whole half hour of the sealed book for you today.
We do.
It's right in there with our topic, the man with the stolen face. Do we have a broadcast date on this one, Dave?
We do, July 15th of 1945.
We'll be back.
The sealed book. The book has opened the ponderous door to the secret vault, wherein is kept the great sealed book, in which is recorded all the secrets and mysteries of mankind through the ages. Here are tales of every kind, tales of murder, of madness, of dark deeds, strange and terrible beyond all belief. Keeper of the book, I would know what tale we tell this time. Open the great book and let us read. Slowly, the great book opens. One by one, the keeper of the book turns the pages and stops. Ah, the strange story of a wealthy man who, to enjoy the fortune he had stolen, wove a web of death around those who stood in his way. A tale titled, The Man with the Stolen Face. It is written in the pages of the sealed book. Our story begins in the large, richly furnished office of John Harrington, famous financier. It is late afternoon, and Harrington is speaking to Matthew Briggs, his very confidential secretary.
Well, Matt, this is it. I swore I was going to retire when I had $20 million, and now I have it. I worked hard, and now I'm going to play hard.
And do your plans include me still?
No, of course they do, Matt. I couldn't get along without you.
I see. Yes, I suppose you still need someone to do your dirty work for you.
Why, Matt, what a thing to say. Now, where would you be if you hadn't hooked up with me? Executed and buried these 14 years, that's where.
I know, you don't need to remind me.
Because after all, you did kill that man, Matt. Killed him in cold blood. No, you and I belong together. You could send me to jail, but I still have carefully locked in my lawyer's safe all the evidence necessary to send you to the gallows.
Yes, I know.
Now, why don't you run along to the apartment? I think I'll sit and smoke one last cigar here in my office.
All right. I'll see you later.
Poor Matt, how he hates me. There isn't a thing he dares do about it. Well, I suppose a lot of people hate me. I'm not going to let that worry me any. Now is the time for me to enjoy myself. And I'm going to. Fun. That's my program from now on.
Too bad that program will have to be canceled, Harrington.
Who are you?
I'm Jeremiah Cole, Harrington. You don't recognize the name, I see.
Why should I? I never heard of you before in my life.
I dare say not. But you heard of my father, Nathan Cole.
Oh.
He gave you your first job 20 years ago.
Well, what of it?
I don't suppose you've forgotten that you got your start by cheating him out of his business.
I did nothing illegal.
You ruined my father after he'd befriended you and he died of a broken heart. I've spent 20 years trapping you, and now I'm ready to pull the noose tight.
You're crazy. There isn't a man alive who has anything on me.
I have. San Quentin.
San Quentin? What are you talking about?
When you were 19, a year before you came to the city and Dad gave you a job, you escaped from San Quentin. And you killed a guard doing it.
Nonsense. You're crazy.
Believe me, I can prove it. I've spent almost 20 years getting ready for just this moment.
What do you want?
I want $20 million.
You can't be serious. Why, that's every cent I have in the world.
You ruined my father, and I intend to ruin you. Turn over to me your entire fortune. I'll consider that punishment enough.
No, no, I won't do it.
I have two detectives waiting now in the outer office. Do you want me to call them in?
No. No, wait. All right. I'll do it. I'll give you everything.
I thought that would be your decision. Very well. Just sign this paper. And then you're...
What are you doing? Get your hands off my throat.
You fool. You think I'm the man to give up that easy? I'll show you. Yes, I have $20 million, and nobody's going to take them away from me. Nobody. Threaten me, would you? That's what happens to men who threaten John Harrington. Now I've got to get your body out of sight. Yes, of course, the vault. I haven't locked it yet. Plenty of room in it for a dead blackmailer. So, in you go. There you are. Now to close the door and set the time clock. And nobody will be able to find you before Monday. As for your detectives outside, there's a back door to this office by which I can leave. You didn't know that, did you, Mr. Cole? There's a lot of things you didn't know, and one of them is that you shouldn't try to get the better of John Harrington.
So John Harrington slipped away by means of the back door, and once safely outside, telephoned Briggs, giving Briggs instructions to meet him at his mountain lodge that night with all the money and securities he could put his hands on. Harrington then made his way by lonely back roads to his isolated lodge in the hills, at which Briggs presently arrived to learn his employer's unfortunate plight.
But, John, what can you do? If you kill this man, Cole, I don't see how you...
You're here to help me, not to hang crepe.
All right, just tell me what you want me to do.
Then listen, we're safe here for quite a while. Nobody knows about this hideaway but you and me. We have plenty of food and we can stay here indefinitely.
Yes, but the minute you leave here, someone will recognize you. That rugged face of yours has been in the papers and newsreels so often everybody knows it.
I'm aware of that. So, I've got to have a new face.
A new face?
Why not? I know just the man to do it. Ludwig Müller.
Müller? You mean the plastic surgery expert who was mixed up with that gang out in Chicago?
That's the one. He was given 5 years for altering the features of members of the gang. Well, he must be out now. That was 6 years ago.
Yes. Yes, I don't doubt he could do it, but...
I have it all planned out. Now, first you've got to bring Müller here with all the necessary equipment. Then you have to find someone my age and my height who's willing to become John Harrington.
Become you? Oh, that's insane. Why, even for all your money, who would trade places with you and go to the electric chair?
Don't be stupid, Matt. I tell you, I have that worked out, too. Now, listen. You've got to find someone my age and general build who has no wife or family, who's not wanted by the police, and has never been involved with the law in any way, who's lived an inconspicuous life and has never attracted much attention. I'll take his place and live his life. He'll take mine and become a millionaire.
But, John...
Don't argue! You find such a man and bring him here, and I'll guarantee to persuade him to make the exchange. When I make a plan, it doesn't go wrong.
And now to continue the story, as it is written in the sealed book. A week passed, then a second, and a third. Then late one evening, Briggs returned. In the car with him were two men, one large and heavy set like John Harrington, the other slender, pale, and nervous. Briggs ushered them to separate rooms. Then he reported to his master.
Well, man... Who have you got to take my place?
His name is Quincy. William Quincy. I have his whole life history written down for you. Here.
Let's see. William Quincy, 39, born in Detroit, parents dead, unmarried, no police record, college education, traveling salesman, down on his luck at the moment. He seems to fit the bill. Does anybody know you brought him here?
Not a soul.
Good. Bring him in. I'll put the proposition to him.
All right. Come in, Quincy. John, this is William Quincy.
Hello, Quincy. Sit down.
Holy smoke, you're John Harrington.
That's right. Now sit down, have a cigar, and we'll get down to cases. Quincy, what would you do for $1 million?
$1 million?
I'm ready to pay that much money for someone who'll spend 10 years, maybe less, in jail in my place.
What kind of a trick are you trying to pull? Briggs told me you're wanted for 2 murders.
I'm not trying to pull any trick. I'm innocent of the California murder, and the worst I could get for killing that fellow in my office is manslaughter.
He was a blackmailer, and I lost my temper. Well, is it a deal?
For $1 million? Yes. Yes, it's a deal.
Good. I'm afraid that you'll have to sell me your face as well as your time, Quincy.
Sell you my face? Oh, that's a hot one.
What's so funny about it?
Excuse me, Mr. Harrington. I've always heard that a man's face was his fortune, but I never knew mine had any market value before.
Well, it has. $1 million.
Okay. You've bought it.
Of course, you have to take my face in exchange.
Oh, sure. Huh. Sure, I understand.
Good. There are a lot of things to be settled yet, but we have time for that. Matt, will you bring in Ludwig Muller?
Of course, John.
There's just one thing I want to know, Mr. Harrington.
Huh?
When I'm you, how am I going to clear myself of that California rap which you're innocent of?
Very simply. You'll take my face, but your fingerprints won't jibe with the prints on file at San Quentin. That'll be obvious proof you're not the man.
Very clever, Mr. Harrington.
I think of every detail, Quincy, as you'll see. Oh, come in, Dr. Muller.
Dr. Muller, this is Mr. Harrington.
Please, not Dr. Muller. I have no license. I'm plain Mr. Muller.
Just as you like, Mr. Muller. But sit down, please.
Thank you. Now, may I ask why I was brought here?
Just to help me and Mr. Quincy here exchange faces.
Exchange faces? But why should you wish to do such a thing?
For personal reasons. We plan to exchange identities. You could make my face look like Quincy's and his like mine, couldn't you?
Yes, of course I could, but...
Then you're going to do it, and I'm going to pay you $1 million.
$1 million? No, you cannot mean it.
I do mean it. With that much money, you can become a man of science again. You can build laboratories, experiment, become famous, all just for a simple job of plastic surgery.
Not simple, no, but... Yes, Mr. Harrington, I will do it.
Would you do it? Would you trade faces and places with someone for $1 million?
For $1 million? I don't know.
Where's Gar with his time calculator of what it's worth in today's dollars?
Oh, well, that's true. Because being in from 1945, yeah,
probably like $10 million or more now.
Yeah. If you took inflation into case, it might be a hard thing to turn down.
Yeah. I don't know. You start getting into things like, and some great horror films have been done like that too, where you lose your identity and so forth.
Yeah.
I think Gilgirl's cracking up at the organ music in this one. It is a little tinny. It's a little, but the story is very, very good, and the organist is doing the best they can to keep the tension up.
Part of the reason for the organ music, of course, and there was about a third of the way through. They had a nice little run of it there. This not only was played on the Mutual network, but also was syndicated after that. There were only 26, but I guess it was easier to sell 26 programs. I mean, to syndicate something today, you need close to 100 episodes, I guess.
Yeah.
But back then in radio, again, you had a lot of local stations that could get something like this. And it could make them feel like a lot bigger station by having some of these syndicated programs that were, in a sense, almost first run. And of the 26 episodes that were created, all 26 are still available out there to everyone. So
of the sealed book. Good stuff.
Of the sealed book.
And radio's like that. This is a period piece, so you're going to have organ music. Some of the shows we play, some of the later seasons of Suspense, tremendous orchestration from folks like Bernard Herrmann and others that are just fantastic.
Yes.
But this is a very, very good show. I'm enjoying it, at least. First time I'm hearing it. And let's get to the conclusion.
It does have an interesting ending. And so I tell everybody, hang around for the ending of this show because it is very interesting. And probably not quite what you expect to happen.
And we're going
to
do that right now?
The guy's willing to give $1 million to somebody for his face and $1 million to a doctor for changing people's, swapping people's faces out. Yeah, you never know what else he's up to. And again, just think what a multimillionaire, what he, that would be like a billionaire today, I would imagine.
Absolutely. Stinking rich. Just stinking rich. And he can do what he wants, including...
And just thinking, you know, of the value of it, we weren't that far out of the Great Depression.
Not really, not in 45.
Yeah, we started climbing out of it in 38. It was World War II that really brought us into full production and getting everybody working full time again. So,
yep.
Yeah.
Let's hear part two of The Man with the Stolen Face and find out how this surprise ending is going to turn out.
Muller began work upon the two men. Day after day he worked, patiently with skilled fingers, changing their features, making the face of one into the face of the other. It was a long and difficult job, but as the time for the removal of the final bandages came closer, John Harrington was in excellent spirits.
Well, Quincy, do you feel ready to take over the role of John Harrington, millionaire?
Any time. I've practiced your walk, your signature. I even know what you like to eat. What are you going to do after you become William Quincy, Esquire? I don't suppose you'll be going back to my old hometown, Detroit, will you?
No, I hadn't planned to.
Well, take a tip from me.
Don't. What do you mean? Why not?
There are people there who don't like me.
I thought Briggs said you had a perfectly clear record.
No, I have, but I quarreled with one or two people.
Huh?
Nothing legal, but, well, you wouldn't know who my friends were and who were my enemies, so on the whole, it'd be simpler just to give Detroit a wide berth.
You're talking very strangely, Quincy. What's behind it?
Not a thing. I'm just worked up, I guess. Because tomorrow we're going to see what we look like as each other.
The next day, Ludwig Muller removed the bandages from their faces and from Harrington's hands. And when he held mirrors for them to see themselves...
Good heavens.
You do not recognize yourself, huh, Mr. Harrington?
I should say not. Why, I'm almost tempted to say hello, Quincy, when I look in the mirror.
It is my finest job.
Well, I'll say it is. Personally, I like the change.
I congratulate you, Muller. We must drink a toast to your success.
Thank you.
That's a good idea. We'll drink to Harrington, safe in jail. And Quincy, adrift in the wide, dangerous world?
What the deuce,
John?
Oh, hello, Matt. How do you like my new face?
Why, it's a perfect job.
We were just going to drink to it. Bring some glasses and a decanter, will you? In fact, bring the special decanter of Napoleon brandy.
Certainly. I'll get it.
Napoleon brandy, eh?
Huh.
Sounds good. Well, we'll drink to our futures. I may be going to jail for a while, but when I get out, I'm going to live high, wide, and handsome. And how about you, Mr. Harrington Quincy? Where are you headed for with my face?
Oh, I'll see what New York is like, then try Buenos Aires and Rio de Janeiro.
Here's the decanter, John.
Huh.
Shall I pour the drinks?
Yes, Matt, and one for yourself.
No, thanks. I never drink. You know that. But here you are, Quincy.
Thank you.
Dr. Muller.
Thank you.
And John.
Thanks. Gentlemen, I propose a toast to our collective futures.
I'll drink to that. Come on, Doc. Bottoms up.
That's smooth stuff.
Now, very good indeed, Mr. Harrington.
I'm glad you liked it. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have some business to talk over with Matt. But keep the decanter and help yourself. Today is a day to cut loose.
And I'm going to cut Pour us both another, Doc.
Sure.
Come along into my office, Matt.
Yes, John.
Now sit down and let's see where we are.
I've taken care of everything I can think of. All transfers of money and stocks have been finished except for, well, a couple of million.
I'm afraid we'll have to let those last few millions go. Too much danger trying to transfer them. But you've done well, Matt.
Thank you, John. What was that? Sounded like somebody falling. Here it is again.
I rather imagine it was Quincy and Muller,
Quincy.
Matt. The poison I put in that brandy yesterday works fast.
Poison?
Of course. I only pretended to drink mine.
You mean you...
Exactly. I couldn't let them live. They knew too much.
Have you no human feelings whatever?
Not where my own skin is concerned. I propose to start my new life as William Quincy with a clean slate and no witnesses left behind me.
Oh. Does that include me too, John?
I'm afraid it does, Matt. No, don't move. I have my gun here in my pocket. See?
Yes. I see now. I've been a fool, haven't I?
I'm afraid so. You should have acted first, Matt, and killed me.
Yes, I should have. But I never had the courage.
The race is to the strong, never to the weak.
Maybe you're right, John. Maybe, but the weak sometimes win, too. This is a joke on me and on Quincy, but it's a joke on you, too, John, because... because...
Goodbye, Matt. Well, that's that. When the police find you, Matt, together with my body, the story of John Harrington will be over for good and all. But the story of William Quincy, footloose and fancy free, is just beginning.
To continue the story, as it is written in the sealed book. A day later, John Harrington slipped away from the mountain hideout, leaving death in sole possession. He had no qualms and no fears. His new face was that of another man, and he became the other man. As William Quincy, he reached New York and went to the hotel where Matt Briggs had made a reservation for him by mail.
Yes, sir. Can I help you?
My name's Quincy, William Quincy. You're holding a suite for me.
Oh, yes, sir. 17E. If you'll just register.
Certainly.
And here's a letter we've been holding for you, Mr. Quincy.
A letter? Thank you. Why, it's in Matt's handwriting.
And there were two gentlemen asking for you yesterday.
Two gentlemen?
Yes, sir.
What did you tell them?
But that you hadn't checked in yet, sir.
If they ask for me again, tell them I've canceled my reservations. I'm here for a vacation, and I don't want to be disturbed by anyone.
A few minutes later, John Harrington was alone in the luxurious suite Briggs had reserved for him. He stared out at New York with a scowl on his brow, fingering the letter the room clerk had given him.
Who the deuce could have been asking for me? And why in the world should Matt have written me a letter? It's postmarked the 10th. He must have written it the day before I... Well, I might as well read it. Dear Joan, you'll get this letter when you reach New York. By then, you will be William Quincy for good and all, and Quincy will be John Harrington. I've talked with him, and he has agreed as his first act to ask your lawyer for the evidence you've been holding over my head all these years. He will destroy it. Then, at last, I will be free of you forever. That poor devil, that was his mistake. Well, what else did he say? And now, I want to give you a word of warning. The worm has turned after all these years. I have outsmarted you at last with your own help. What in thunder does he mean? Why do you suppose Quincy was so willing to take your face and go to jail even for money? He had good reason for it. Believe me, he... Who is it?
Telegram from Mr. Quincy, sir.
Telegram? Just a second. Well, let's have it.
All right, Quincy, put him up. Come on in, Rocky.
Yeah, Lefty.
Well, Quincy, old pal, you don't seem very glad to see us.
Well, what's the meaning of this? Who are you and what do you want?
That ain't Quincy. My trigger finger's itchy. Back up a little. That's better.
Who are you? What do you want?
Why, we want you, Quincy. You ought to know that.
I don't know who you are or why you're here, but you're making a mistake.
Listen to him, Rocky. He's forgotten his old pals Lefty and Rocky.
I tell you, I never saw you before in my life.
You mean you've forgotten all about it, Detroit, Quincy? How you double-crossed the boss and my kid brother 6 months ago and got them both bumped off by the cops? Well, ain't that forgetful of you?
No, you're wrong. You've got the wrong William Quincy.
Hey, Lefty, you don't suppose this could be the wrong guy, do you?
Ah, what makes you say that? You're nuts?
No, but... Well, it's just that this guy's voice don't sound like the way I remember Quincy's voice did.
That's right. I'm not the Quincy, you know.
Never mind the voice, Rocky. Look at the face. Yeah. Could there be two guys in a world with a puss like that?
But I tell you, I'm not...
You're trying to stall. Let him have it.
No, please! I'll give you $1 million!
Well... That takes care of that.
Yeah. That pays off for the boss and your kid brother. He should have known we'd keep looking for him till we found him.
Did you hear that stuff about $1 million? He must have been nuts to think we'd listen to guff like that from a cheap dope peddler like Bill Quincy.
Yeah. But, you know, Lefty, I'd still kind of like to know who sent us that letter, tipping us off we'd find him here at the Clark House in New York.
And so ends the tale, The Man with the Stolen Face, as it is written in the sealed book. The plot, which John Harrington had so cleverly contrived to change his identity, led him to his doom at the hands of William Quincy's enemies. Twisted indeed are the strands of fate in which destiny entangles mere mortals. Keeper of the book, before you close the great volume, Show us the tale we tell next time. This one, yes, the tale of a handsome and mysterious man who had a strange power over people and who caused heartbreak and ruin wherever he went. A tale titled, My Beloved Must Die. Be sure to be with us again next time when the sound of the great gong heralds another strange and exciting tale from The Sealed Book. The Sealed Book, written by Bob Arthur and David Cogan, is produced and directed by Jock McGregor.
And that was The Man with the Stolen Face,
as it was written in The Sealed Book.
A little dramatic, but no, that it was a cool story with an ironic twist at the end.
You got karma coming back to bite him in the butt. Yes, you do.
Or on the face. But,
or on the face, yes.
Yeah. Just, again, faces used in horror. I was reading a little bit while enjoying this about Eyes Without a Face. There's this horrible scene in which a woman's face is removed surgically. And, of course, the effects don't compare to today, but for 1960, that French film, Eyes Without a Face, or Yez Yeux Sans Visage. Again, butchering the French language. Sorry, I give up. it was frightening for its day.
It was. You know what's also frightening? Sometimes, even though a story where just about everybody died, so you'd think it was really Inner Sanctum and not The Sealed Book, you can still learn something from that story.
And so, Eerie House Radio proudly presents a garrulous moral of the story.
With apologies to Gar, if you're going to pay someone to go to jail for you, don't buy his face. You never know where that face has been. If you have to buy a face, then buy soupy sales. Then the worst that can happen is that you'll get a pie in the face.
There you go. A lesson to live by, learned here on your house.
Lesson to live by, yes.
Yeah. So what about, do you, Dave, have a favorite or a particularly frightening face that you recall, maybe from your youth, that maybe you found disturbing or otherwise particularly horrifying? Exclude X-Y's.
Well, you mean excluding the thing I have to look in the face to shave in the mirror to shave every day? Yeah.
There's that, but yeah. I
don't know that I have. I just one thing I remember is that one of the night galleries, an old lady who had died, and they took the ring off of her finger, and she came back to haunt that girl who took that ring. That was pretty frightening face. So the whole thing was frightening, but that was a very frightening face.
Oh, gosh, I remember a number. Even the birds where they find that gentleman that was pecked to death, you know, the old couple in the house, and they do a series of close-ups into his eye being pecked out. That was horrifying to me. Disfigured Amazing Colossal Man in the second movie, War of the Colossal Beast. I guess he got mutated from radiation or something, God knows what. But it was a pretty horrifying face. In fact, I was such a sick kid in kindergarten. At Halloween time, they said, in kindergarten, they broke bad with a 64 box full of Crayolas and said, all right, we're going to have an Ugly Man contest. And I believe Superhost had just shown Amazing Colossal Beast. So here I am. And this is just how things have changed. If this was today, they would have had me in, like, I don't know, therapy or something. I drew the head of the guy from Amazing Colossal Beast, but I made it gorier with the eye hanging out and blood dripping off. And in kindergarten. In kindergarten.
Wow, you were quite the artiste then. I can't even draw that now.
But I won the contest. It was so gory. I kept thinking, if I had more blood, it's going to be worse. You know, and that's what I want. It's an Ugly Band contest, right?
Yeah,
so,
I don't think they'd allow that kind of a contest today either. So you'd be safe because they wouldn't allow that kind of a contest.
Probably. Probably.
Because that would not be a politically correct thing to do. It's not a nice thing to do.
Yes. It makes children prejudge what is ugly and what isn't and what I give up.
Yeah.
I give up. And that's why mostly I watch black and white.
That's true. It's a little easier to decipher there, isn't it?
I sometimes wish the entire world would turn black and white. If I lost my color and my vision, wouldn't bother me one bit.
Nothing could ever be in living color, whatever the heck that meant.
Yeah, maybe it would bother me a little. Yeah. A few things that you want to...
How could you tell if she had blonde hair?
Jeez. I have a horrible answer that I'm not giving. it involves handstands. But I digress. You know, yesterday, folks, if you weren't here or if you haven't had the opportunity to go back into the archive and listen to yesterday's show, they brought us an interesting interview from a gentleman with a redundant name, Carol Carroll.
True. Not really his real name, but that was what he went by, his nom de plume, his writing name. And he is one of the faceless people of radio, but something you can't do without in radio. He wrote for some of the top talents and top shows in radio. I talked a little bit about reading his autobiography and some wonderful things. He was very close to George Burns and worked very closely with Bing Crosby as well, especially during his Kraft Music Hall years. But he really gives an insight to what happened in old-time radio, as well as some of the personalities in there. We shared a part last night. We can at least sneak one part in here now, right, Dale?
Oh, we got plenty of time for this. And, folks, I think you'll appreciate this gentleman's wit. He had me chuckling quite a bit yesterday, and I'm sure he won't fail to do so today. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
The next thing that happened was they called me again, and they had a strip show called The Stebbins Boys, which was a kind of a third cousin to Lum and Abner, if you remember them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Little town where these two guys ran something and jabbered with each other in a New England dialect for 8 minutes, and the other 5 minutes was commercial. So there seems the fellow who wrote this thing, it slipped into the bottle, and they didn't have a strip for the following week. And they called me, and naturally the guy who writes stuff that doesn't get produced. And they told me what they needed, and they said, had I heard the show? And I said, of course I'd heard the show. I'd never even heard of the show. So I listened to the show, and I got what I thought was a smashing idea for this little town. At that time, there was a lot of talk about something that was then called a silent policeman. This was a kind of a buoy-shaped thing in the middle of a cross-section that controlled traffic. It was a traffic light in the middle of the street for little communities that couldn't afford a live policeman. So I brought a guy in town to sell this the Stebbins boys at Silent Policeman for their town. He said, it'll solve your traffic problem. They said, we haven't got a traffic problem. And the salesman said, will you put this in? And you will have. So this was the whole basis for five things. And you know, that was a great idea. But the guy sobered up and did it. And that never got on the air. And that, I figured, had washed up my career with the J. Walter Thompson Company. About 3 weeks later, I got a call if I could I come down and see him. They had just hired Burns and Allen. And wanted to know if I would like to take a permanent job with them. And of course I would. Anybody offering permanent jobs at that time was not to be sneered at. And that was in March of 1932, and I was with them until 67 of January 67.
So you wrote for Burns and Allen through their whole radio?
Not through their whole. I wrote for them for about 2.5 years, and then I moved on to other things. But I traveled with Annette and Googie, as everybody called him that, because that was his name, Nathaniel Birnbaum.
Uh-huh. And Googie was
Gracie.
Gracie, yeah.
She's the darlingest woman I ever knew. I get tears in my eyes thinking of it.
They were on for Robert Burns Cigars.
Yeah, that's
they?
Exactly what they were on for, with Guy Lombardo.
Uh-huh.
The guy who ran the radio department at J. Walter Thompson was a great big Pennsylvania Dutchman with thumbs that bent all the way back, indicating how stubborn he was, who had the wonderful idea of putting things together that were a little bit antagonistic, and thus making enough people mad on each side so that they would listen out of sheer anger. And so he put Guy Lombardo, the sweetest music this side of heaven, was what he was billing himself as, and this comedy couple together. And the music went on all the time, and we'd fade it down, and Gracie and Nat were supposed to be dancing, which was what they did in their act. They danced, and he would say, stop, and they'd tell a joke, and then they'd start to dance again. Well, they left out the stop, and they just did these little routines, and then the music would come up, and they'd go. And we got letters, how can you interrupt that beautiful music for those terrible jokes? And who needs that music when that lovely little lady is on there saying those wonderful things? And it worked like a charm. It worked like a charm every time Reber tried it, until he put together Milton Berle and Charles Laughton. Then it didn't work at all.
Well, that's quite a combination there.
Yeah, we did that. I did a show. It was Milton Berle, Charles Laughton, and Bob Crosby's Bobcats. There's a parlay.
Mm.
And this was just about as successful as Hitler's effort in World War II.
That Burns and Allen with Guy Lombardo, didn't they sometimes broadcast from two different parts of the country?
Uh-huh. Oh, yes. I used to travel with Burns and Allen sometimes. There was a unit of Burns and Allen and Guy Lombardo that went together. And then occasionally they'd split up, and Guy and the band would go one place, and Nat and Googie would go another place. And I went with them, of course, because I didn't have to write anything for the band. This was funny in those days, because this was a miracle to most people that a band could be playing in St. Louis or Chicago, and these people could be talking in Indianapolis, and they were together. It was a miracle to us, too, sometimes.
But they did it, huh?
One place in Indianapolis, the only place, the station there was hardly more than a switching station. They had a room about the size of an average living room, which they called a studio, and they used for broadcasting any spot news in case anything happened in Indianapolis. But they didn't have to use it often, because nothing ever did. But that's where we were supposed to broadcast, and in this case, we were all together. The band, 11 pieces, I think Guy had, and Nat and Gracie, and we wound up with the band scattered around in all different places in the office and all over. I remember the elevator had to be turned off so that it wouldn't come up while George and Gracie were doing their routines, because it was an elevator that they'd apparently stolen from some old Parisian hotel and imported at great cost. Made a lot of noise. And about 15 minutes before airtime, I said to the guy running the station, I said, is that clock right? You know, it's a routine question if you're going to put on a broadcast that has to fit into the network. Mm. And he said, I don't know, what time have you got? Well, I looked at my watch, and my watch was about 7 minutes different from this wall clock that he had. So I literally had to call New York to find out what time it was so that we could hit the air.
And he had to hold the elevator.
Hold the elevator.
Funny guy.
So he had to call New York to find out what time it was.
Yeah, that was the delay here. I was also on the phone with New York, and it's exactly 7:41 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Yeah, but you know what? Your call in New York was a bill collector, so you know.
Yes.
I can't help that. That was a fun interview, Foggs. You're right. And, you know, he's got so many more parts that at times when we have more time to share with you different parts of this interview, we can certainly do that. We also started off something else last night, Dale.
Yeah, we did. Dave, I don't have any change. You got a nickel on you?
I got a nickel here. I found it in the cushions of my car there, the seat of my car. So you can have it.
All right. Let me have this, and we're gonna stick it in the commercial jukebox. That's right. Lots of old time radio commercials, and we've got them loaded up in our electronic jukebox. Let me just take this nickel and drop it in the slot. See what we can do.
Top value stamps, the best gifts in life are free. Gifts to grace your living room, each backed by a guarantee. Free for top value stamps, an elegant polished brass chafing dish. Or, if something spills, a Bissell carpet sweeper, perfect for touch-up. To brighten your living room, select the beautiful Bradley table lamp, fashioned in walnut and brass. To enjoy your favorite TV shows in any room, choose an RCA portable television set. Like everything else, free for top value stamps.
So save top value stamps. The best gifts in life are free, free, free.
You know, I wonder if how many of our listening audience remembers trading stamps. Of course, in Northeast Ohio, we had, I believe they were called Eagle Green Stamps, weren't they?
Yeah, the S&H Green Stamps. I actually
S&H Green Stamps. That's right.
Have a box of those that my grandfather. Or they might be the Top Value. I'm not sure that he, but I have a whole box of these partially filled booklets of the stamps. Yes.
And what you did, folks, is when you went to the grocery store or whatever, they gave you, with your purchase, based on the amount of your purchase, they gave you green stamps and a book, you know, that you would save up the green stamps till you filled up the book. And depending on how many books, you could buy or even get stuff or buy stuff cheap or get it free. Kind of like catalog shopping in a way. There's a lot of things.
Kind of like rewards programs today, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, gosh, I even remember the premiums they used to have at the grocery stores. Each week they'd have a different volume of an encyclopedia. You could build an encyclopedia set or a set of dishes. They'd give away dishes.
Yeah.
And the stuff they would put in products too, like for example, in laundry detergent, you could get a set of towels from laundry detergent. They'd have a towel in the laundry detergent box.
That would make that box a little heavier. Yes, it would.
Yes, it did. But I'll tell you what, it was a successful promotion, especially if you know you're young, you're starting out, you don't have some of those items for your household, or Or maybe you just need to freshen up and get newer stuff. Well,
yeah,
buy a box of Tide and see what's inside. Hey.
Yep, you still need to buy laundry soap, even if you don't have many towels.
Yeah. Yeah, so amazing how things change over the years. But we keep a straight face and move forward here on Erie House Radio as we've been facing
the
weekend.
I was going to say you had a couple other things. A website called FlavorWire, and they were talking about some of the faces of some of the Hollywood people. And I guess the studios tried to settle on the image for Judy Garland as she transitioned into adult film roles, not adult films, okay? Adult
yeah.
film roles. They tried to change almost everything about her looks, from the ugly duckling, as they called her, was forced to wear caps on her teeth, lose weight, insert rubber discs into her nose to change the shape, pluck her hairline, and change her eyebrows, and change the shape of her lips. They did all that to poor Judy Garland to try and get a different look for her as she was transforming into there, into who she became.
That would explain her appearance later in life.
It could be that or the drugs. Another one they listed here was Peter Lorre, and they said he was a living character. So, you know,
a living caricature in what way? I mean,
but because of the face and the big eyes and
oh yeah, yeah. That he was one of the
I was trying to see who else, you know, that I could quickly look at here, and I'm not, you know, one thing I see that nobody really talks about, they might if I got there to that point. No, I'd already gotten past it. Buster Keaton, and they even called him the Great Stone Face. No matter what happened around him, he never lost that stone face expression that he had.
Yeah, he. You talk about a deadpan, and Buster Keaton fills the bill. Part of his humor, no matter how out of control or funny things got, that was one guy who never lost his stuff. Let us say, during any kind of a production,
during any kind, even up to that Twilight Zone he did, and he didn't do a whole lot more after that Twilight Zone. A lot of people didn't really care for that. I liked it. I liked that episode. I thought it was very interesting the way they did Buster Keaton in the Twilight Zone.
Well, it was a great homage to his own body of work, and yet it was still truly a Twilight Zone. And it was one of the periodically they would have a comic overtone to them, and that was one of them.
And in that they. Went and they took out every third or fourth frame in order to, when they went back in time to the original time of, which was of the 1800s, I think, took out like every fourth or fifth frame in order to give it look like the old hand cranked movie feel.
Yeah, it was a great effect. I thought they pulled it off very well in that episode.
But even in that, even though it was, again, as what most of his were comedic stories, you never saw him crack a smile. Even the interviews I've heard him do and the TV shows that I've seen him do and things like that, he never gave that up. He never gave up that smile.
No, he was definitely a pro's pro in that regard. I liked him in the beach movies too. I think that was towards the end of his working career too.
Yes, yeah.
With Frankie.
Yeah, that would have been after the Twilight Zone. Yeah.
Probably right around the same time, towards the very end of his career.
Yeah.
We have time for Wheel of Radio if you'd like to call us. It's 646-378-0264, and you too can give the wheel a tug, Foggs or Gil or anybody, if you can hear us, and maybe we can't see you in the chat because we know there's more of you out there. Please give us a call if you're listening live. If you're not, you're not going to get through. but we'll give the Wheel of Radio a spin, and we've got some random rarities for you.
All kinds of fun, and that's the nice thing about this. We have all these stories, science fiction and horror stories and things like that. It's kind of fun to throw in some of these bits that were done from comedy shows and variety shows and some of the great World War II programs that were made for the servicemen.
Yeah, and as you have mentioned a number of times here before, thank goodness for the Armed Services radio broadcasts. So we wouldn't have half of these wonderful radio shows without them.
And it's amazing we have those. One of these days we'll get to play Carol Talks about the Armed Forces radio and how they were put onto glass transcriptions instead of the other way. It's amazing any of those even survived. So...
All right. Well, we have no callers at this time, at least not that we can see. Block Talk's a little hinky sometimes. Dave, I think it's your turn to step up to the wheel.
I think it is. So if I just get up here and get a one and a two and a three.
Around and around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows.
Goodness me, it's old black magic.
The five young men now lined up in front of this mail call microphone are Leo Diamond and his quintet. They're here to help you fellas out with your problems musical. If you can't whistle and you can't sing, you're in a pretty bad way. Unless you happen to have a pocket full of brass reeds which make a noise like this. Thank you, Leo. I am referring, of course, to the soldier's sousaphone, the lowly mouth organ. If you've got a harmonica in the pocket of your fatigues, then, to use the GI vernacular, you are definitely rolling with high octane. Maybe some of you men snagged the mouth organ out of that last batch special service sent overseas. And in case you haven't mastered the fine art of making music on the wheeze box, maybe Leo and his gang can help you get harmonica happy. The whole idea is first to breathe in. Illustration, please, Professor. Then you breathe out. Then, when you get together with four other fellows and start breathing in and out a little faster, out comes black magic.
Never thought I'd hear Old Black Magic on a harmonica.
On an harmonica, yes.
Yes.
Amazing. You know, and actually that was almost through, from World War II through the Korean War, they were so hard to come by for the servicemen. So every once in a while they came through and they all got snarfed up. Remember an episode of MASH, how they traded just about everything that they could to get this harmonica for a kid. And that's kind of what thinking of that. And but they're very good at it, too. I've seen some videos of some people playing harmonicas on YouTube and such. It's just truly, when you master any instrument, but the harmonica is kind of a different kind of instrument, and just a fun thing whenever you have anybody that masters an instrument, period.
I trade them all in for a nice theremin.
Yeah, they don't have, yep, you don't have to worry about notes for that thing.
No, no. Yeah, and you get to creep people out. That's the best thing.
I think there's a theremin recreator website out there where you can kind of move your mouth over it.
It's not the same.
Not the same, okay.
Not the same. I'd like to get my hands on one of those old wooden boxes, you know, the original type theremin with the electronics and have at it.
I do have a friend that used to have one. I don't know whether he still has it or not, but he did used to have one.
Yeah. I don't think they're that expensive. I mean, I don't know that they're up in the thousands, and they have, you know, modern ones. I don't know how they sound compared to the old ones, but it'd be fun to have. Dave, is Weirdness Really Bad Movie doing anything fun where people can maybe go see on their computers or?
Well, they can tomorrow
or
night.
Phones?
And Misty Brew, I think, is on before us. So, Arachna is on before. So at 10:30, the Captain Zero has his next adventure there on the Vortex. And then on Monday night, the Weirdness Really Bad Movie will be back with a fun little Vincent Price number called Shock.
Oh, I love that movie. That is a good movie.
And we're hosting that one from the Silly Psychiatrist office because I'm having this obsession with, as she says, how I think I'm a movie host, you know.
Ah. Well, you think right. You've done a few. You've done a few shows. And if you want to see the show that Dave just described, it's www.horrorhost.net. The Vortex, our friends over there, are hosting some fine entertainment. We've got maybe just a little over a minute here. Want to thank Gil Girl and also Fogsbane for listening live and participating in the chat. Hope you enjoyed our radio shows and the little facts that we bring you here, too.
Yep, now they can go off and face Sunday themselves.
Yes. we're not doing Sundays yet, but you never know. Halloween week, we might get a little busy. Like we did last year, we had shows, every day for 5 days, I think. And there's so much more Halloween material. From some of the comedy shows and the different stuff, not the general horror and sci-fi and fantasy stories and murder tales that we bring you here. But
and we didn't talk about it much, but as we get closer to it, of course, I'll be at Gilardi Fest. I'm Dale. I'm hoping that you'll be there with me as well. And
yes, I will.
Not only with the Weirdness Really Bad Movie,
we'll see
Fury
you next.
House.
Dave, got to cut you off. Got to see you next week, folks. We'll be talking about sea monsters.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him. When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
I think they missed the last couple of words. Oh, that's too bad. Sorry to cut you off there, Dave, but I wanted to sneak in our little ending.
Was it watching the clock properly?
Yeah, that's okay. That's my job. That's my job. Watch the clock. I'm nothing but a clock watch here.
Well, you're a professional, you know. Hey.
And I'm okay with that.
You know what we'll have to do? I don't know how we would do it. We should construct a wheel that we could have people spin there at Gulardi Fest.
Ooh.
And if we did that, of different Eerie House hours that we put together on audio CD that we could give people, but that would, of course, have the blogtalk/DLK address on there so they could find us that way as well.
And maybe we'll have some interesting Eerie House merchandise, perhaps. We're working on that.
Yep. So come up second week in October, so start planning your schedule now. Hey, Vogsbane came from over 8 hours away to come meet and greet us and spend some time with us. You can come too.
Yeah.
Right there in Cleveland, Ohio, we'll be at the Cuyahoga County Fairgrounds.
Oh, yeah, that's big time. Dave and I were waxing nostalgic about the original, the first Gulardi Fest, which was done at the fairgrounds.
It was. I think the first, at least two, if not three, before they started going to other venues. And actually, the last place wasn't that bad. They've been to, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different places. Now they're returning back to the original place. So.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, that first year they had, all right, they had the Ghoul, they had Big Chuck, Houlihan, Little John, other members of the cast. Superhost came.
Superhost came from Oregon, yeah.
I think they had some of the other local television show people, if I'm not mistaken. Was Mr. Green Jeans there, perhaps? Or no, Franz the Toymaker was there. and of course, one of my early heroes, Forrest J. Ackerman, the editor of the original Famous Monsters of Filmland magazine, and that
they
was
had
such a thrill to him.
And they had Christina Martin, and what's his name for who was Major Don West? They had both of those guys there from Lost in Space.
Yes, and that was so much fun meeting them. My son was real tiny then. But that was fun. That was fun.
Oh, that was such a great memories. Gulardi Fest had given us over the years, and for us to now be part of that as well is that much more exciting.
It is. I mean, over time, Dave and I have been on different discussion panels with them, and just lots of fun.
So,
just like
plan
just
on
like
it, everybody.
Yeah.
Plan on your,
oh, gosh,
plan on your vacation time, or quit your job to come visit us.
Please, there'll be plenty of parking there. It's a huge, area. I mean, they run the county fair out of there, so it's it's a big place. Hopefully with lots of vendors, or I know there'll be lots of events. There always is, including sometimes showing movies with clips of Gulardi in there, some of the surviving clips.
Yeah, Big Chuck made that wonderful rendition of the woman. What was that? The one about the brain. The
brain that wouldn't die.
Brain that wouldn't die, yeah. And
yeah.
He used Gulardi footage, even some stuff that Tim Conway had done with him as well on the show. Because Tim kept coming back. He felt more comfortable in Cleveland than he did in Hollywood. So whenever he could, he'd run him back to Cleveland and kept doing things, first with Ernie and then later with Big Chuck.
Yeah. Yeah, local guy here. So if you're from the area, you'll enjoy it. But even if not, there's so many things there for people that like the old horror films or other other media. Some of the vendors have, you know, tapes of shows that are hard to find or movies that are hard to find, and all the cool stuff. I love trade shows. I really do. They're a lot of fun.
Yeah, they are a lot of fun.
Whether you work them or go there as a guest, they're a lot of fun. They're a lot of fun. And we hope to see you there. Again, second weekend in October. It'll be a little earlier than usual, which is good for us because we're hoping to do a lot of Eerie House Radio for you on Halloween.
On Halloween week, yeah. That's when you really that's one of your favorite times of year, isn't it, Dale?
Yeah. I don't know that I'll be able to this year because of some personal things that are going on, but generally
right.
I try to save at least a week's vacation for Halloween week. So I can not only enjoy watching some classic horror films that I love myself, but to put into Eerie House TV when it's available, and Eerie House Radio, which right now is our first love here. We love bringing these shows to you. And, I'm sure for Dave, it's remembering shows you're familiar with. It's both for me. It's discovery new and listening to tales I am familiar with.
Yeah, and for me it is. It's meeting with a bunch of old friends, old radio programs, and meeting a few new ones. You know, some of these that are more unique that were only, you know, a certain amount of episodes. That again, when I started collecting, it was hard to get them, hard to find them. There was no. Heck, there weren't any computers, let alone internet, and people to put these out there for free. You had to purchase them by either cassette, by LP vinyl, or by reel to reel. And I did all three of those things to continue. Plus, they would get them in the library, and I'd go in and listen to them, or if I could, copy them off. But yeah, it's. But there's a lot of things that I have just become acquainted with over the last few years, and some even since I've been doing research for these podcasts because they were fairly, you know, when you have a show that was only a summer replacement show and things like that, you may have heard of them or you may not have heard of them, and it just does make it. It makes it so cool to come back and find all these things.
And it's just like movies, you know, like there are some that are just so well done. Like for me, of course, Bride of Frankenstein is one of my favorites. Some of the later films that really, really dabble into real gothic type horror. But, you know, as movie hosts, we've come to appreciate some of the public domain low budget. And they've endeared themselves to us in their crappiness. and I'm sure, although we played predominantly very, very, very good shows here because there's so much to choose from, but even some of the ones that don't measure up to the great, great, great shows, they still have fond memories for us. Or in the case of something maybe that I'm learning and discovering, it still has something to offer in terms of storytelling.
And that's what radio was all about. It was about telling the story and getting it out, hopefully, as effectively as possible. And I guess that's why I was always drawn to it. I had a learning disability with my reading. I didn't know it at the time, but I did. And I just didn't enjoy the written word like you were able to, Dale, and like so many others. So I resorted to getting my stories from the radio. And they're great old friends, and it's great to have times like to meet up with them again.
And that's what we do for you each weekend here on Eerie House Radio with our new friends. And some old friends, too, who come and join us, either as guests, listeners, or what have you. It's just a genre that, much like the old movies, we don't want to see this stuff go away. Hopefully we'll attract some younger listeners as well. You know what I mean? Do you have to listen to this stuff every day? No, you should, but you don't have to. but take a look at something old, something different. Look at the roots of the type of entertainment that that's available today.
Yeah.
There's something to be learned from it.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll get the younger...
And enjoyed.
And hopefully get some younger ones so that the people continue to enjoy old radio. And upon occasion, you know, you have little groups that get together and recreate or create new audio dramas. And that's a cool thing, too, something we do look forward to at some point, doing some of that here at Erie House. So
yeah, we're going to bring you some short tales. There's some that Dave's already done that we've shared, and we'll share more here. But I think I'd get a huge kick out of being part of a production like that, and we'll see what we can come up with.
Yeah, it'd be a lot of fun, and then you get a chance to share them again. That's even more fun.
Yes, indeed. Well, folks, thanks so much for listening to us. I'm running out of stuff to say.
Well, we both have some other things we need to work on and attend to. So as we prepare for next week's broadcast, we can tell them to have a great weekend.
Yep. And it's probably time to say goodnight, Dave, and goodnight.
And goodnight, Jimmy. That's right.
Good night. Good night. Good night. It's time to say good night. Good night. What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Arrivo, up we the same.
Good night, folks, and good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.